Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
A proposed settlement of a lawsuit about the rights of transgender people in North Carolina would allow them to use the public facilities that correspond to their gender identity. The news comes as Governor Roy Cooper also issued an executive order protecting LGBT North Carolinians in state government from discrimination on the job. Here with the details is Chris Brook with the North Carolina chapter of the ACLU. Well, Chris, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time, as always.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Let's talk about this proposed settlement or consent decree for non-lawyers out there. First, what does that mean to have this proposal?
What it means is that some of the parties have come together in a fashion that would resolve this lawsuit. And the way it would resolve this lawsuit is interpret HB 142, in particular Section 2, would set up some new bathroom rules post HB 2 in a fashion that we believe is not only consistent with the text of HB 142, but also would avoid some of the constitutional and statutory problems that would follow if HB 142's Section 2 and its bathroom rules were interpreted the way a lot of members of the legislature said that they should be interpreted. We had many members of the legislature saying who voted for HB 2 and then voted for HB 142, saying that HB 142 simply continued the discriminatory bathroom provisions of HB 2. And candidly, that portion of HB 2 was written in a very vague, sort of opaque fashion. We reached out before we filed a lawsuit about HB 142 to the legislative leadership and to the UNC system and said, you know, our plaintiffs, transgender plaintiffs that we represent, have serious concerns about whether they're going to be discriminated against and whether they're going to be sort of ejected from public life by not being able to utilize restrooms in public facilities, and have changed their behavior based on those concerns. Can you allay them? And they would not allay those concerns. And that's why we proceeded with the litigation, and that's why we've proceeded with this consent decree, which we think provides some guidance to the plaintiffs that we represent, provide some guidance to folks who have to run our public buildings in the state of North Carolina, but also avoids North Carolina violating the federal constitution or Title IX or Title VII anti-discrimination protections in federal law.
What happens now?
There have been developments since the proposed consent decree went in on Wednesday. The UNC defendants, as well as the legislative leadership, Speaker Moore and Senate Leader Berger, yesterday filed motions to dismiss our lawsuit, separate and apart from this consent decree. They will have signaled that they will oppose the consent decree and that they'll be filing motions and briefing along those lines later in November. This is something that could be in front of the judge next month. Could be something where we're summoned over to Winston-Salem in front of Judge Schroeder either next month or in December. One of the things that was interesting about UNC's response that we saw yesterday and their motion to dismiss yesterday is that they say they interpret 142 essentially entirely consistently with what the consent decree says. What we proposed with the executive defendants, including the governor and the attorney general, is that no transgender North Carolinian is going to be prevented from utilizing a restroom that accords with their gender identity. And UNC says, you know, we have to refrain from any sort of regulation of bathrooms, including preventing any transgender student or employee from utilizing a restroom that accords with their gender identity. If they have arrived at the same interpretation of HB 142, you know, it does raise the question of why they were not also interested in joining the consent decree to bring clarity to this situation, but also to end this litigation.
And this applies to public buildings only, correct?
That's right. That's right. Private businesses have always been able to come up with their own rules in regards to bathroom access. You know, one of the things that Charlotte was trying to do was make it a little bit easier for transgender folks and all LGBT folks to be able to go out to a restaurant with their family, be able to check into a hotel. But, you know, the broader thing here, and one of the things that is constantly reiterated by news developments, is that the business community is a lot further along this path than our legislature is. The business community understands that in 2017, it's just a best business practice. It's a gold standard to have robust anti-discrimination protections that are fully inclusive of the entire LGBTQ community, including the transgender community. And that is the best way not only to attract talent to our state, but also to retain talent in our state.
Folks who were following this in the news who aren't familiar with all the ins and outs probably also saw that Governor Cooper issued an executive order the same day. Tell us what that does.
It first off says there's not going to be any discrimination in the executive branch based on the fact that somebody is a member of the LGBTQ community. Says that no one who is transgender is going to be prevented from utilizing a restroom that accords with their gender identity. So that is a new thing, and essentially saying that as one of the largest employers in the state, that the executive branch is not going to discriminate against transgender folks is a huge step in the right direction. It also says that there's going to be efforts to ensure that contractors who the state works with and contracts with will also not discriminate against the LGBTQ community. And I think, you know, the governor's power in these areas is obviously limited. Neither of these steps is a panacea. We need to have a situation where localities are able to protect the full LGBTQ community. We need statewide anti-discrimination protections in public accommodations and employment that are fully inclusive of the LGBTQ community. We are not there yet, and if we're candid, we're not close to being there yet with this legislature. Having said that, the consent decree, and if it's entered by the court, and the executive order are two consequential steps in the right direction and moving our state in the direction that the business community has been moving for quite some time, that, you know, not only allows us to attract the best talent to North Carolina, but retain the best talent in North Carolina, and also just makes our state live up to the rhetoric and aspirations that we've long claimed, that we're welcoming and inclusive for anyone who wants to live here, start a family here, and work here.
Lieutenant Governor Forrest, Tammy Fitzgerald, and others immediately went back to sort of the fear-mongering about what happens when transgender people get to use facilities that correspond to their identity. What do you make of this continuing effort to sort of divide us and come up with these sorts of ridiculous scenarios?
Well, to be very direct, no. I was not surprised to see that over the course of the past 18 months. I've learned to be unsurprised by a lot of rhetoric and also responses in regards to developments on this issue. I'm never surprised by the counterfactual statements that are made, in particular by Tammy Fitzgerald, that there is no basis in fact for her concerns about transgender individuals utilizing the restroom that accords with their gender identity. Lieutenant Governor Forrest, it was interesting, had a somewhat more nuanced comment saying that, you know, this opens a loophole where, Chris, you and I as cisgender men are going to suddenly storm into the women's room and pretend that we are transgender. This is not only sort of on its face farcical, but also has not been borne out in any of the other 17 states, over 300 municipalities that have these sorts of protections for transgender individuals. So it's really an effort to just defend the indefensible by, you know, picking some sort of rationale out of thin air, regardless of whether it's borne out by any facts. You know, the other thing that I will note is that the legislative leadership, you know, obviously blasted the governor in their response, which is sort of reflexive, it seems, at this point. But at the same time, they did not go back to some of the most harmful and transphobic rhetoric that we saw during, for example, the HB2 legislative debate. There seems to be some sort of recognition that they don't have the facts there and that they've lost the larger debate. And, you know, trying to find silver linings in what has been an exceptionally difficult 18 months for the entire LGBTQ community, I think it is that there has been a lot of education in regards to transgender North Carolinians, and that we have to thank first and foremost the transgender plaintiffs and transgender North Carolinians who've stepped forward and said, listen, this is how this impacts my life. And that's not easy to do in the face of some of the most powerful people in the state that we've just mentioned, vilifying or at the very least failing to understand your existence. You know, when I look for silver linings, I think that North Carolina much better understands transgender North Carolinians and the obstacles that they face, and also that anti-discrimination protections are not some sort of zero-sum game. They really are simply just a benefit for the LGBTQ community without any sort of corresponding loss of privacy or safety for the rest of us.
Well, thank you for bringing this news, and we'll look forward to having you back as this continues. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Up next, the lessons from New Orleans for North Carolina's hurricane recovery efforts. Stay with us.